It's Friday, July 27th, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Aloha, everyone. Got a great show for you tonight. Strap in. Here it comes.
This is the Geek News Central podcast, part of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. So grab a cup of coffee, take a seat, and crank up that volume. Because you're listening to Todd on the Geek News Central podcast.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central podcast. My name is Todd Cochran, coming to you as live as it can be from historic Ford Island in beautiful Honolulu, Hawaii. How's everyone? Are you ready for the weekend? I know that I am. I've got a great schedule for my weekend. It's called school. I'll get into that a little bit more later, but for all of you that are checking out the show for the first time, hey, thanks for checking us out. And of course, for all of you that are long-term subscribers to the show, thanks for being continued members of the Ohana or part of the family here. And of course, we encourage everyone to get over to geeknewscentral.com, check out all the great content over there, and of course, check out all the archive podcasts via the podcast link on the website. Well, wow, what a week. It has been, how should I describe it? I guess nonstop. From essentially when I wake up about 5 o'clock in the morning until when I was going to bed maybe at 12:30 or 1 in the morning, it has been just an absolutely, my schedule's been full. And, you know, I made a comment, I believe it was at about 10 o'clock on Tuesday, and I said, I'm like, how come I'm still getting email at 10 o'clock at night? You know, doesn't anybody sleep in the world anymore? You know, here in Hawaii, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, and it was a work week. I just couldn't, and it wasn't like these emails were coming from people in Europe. It was all stuff that was coming from people that were in the lower 48. And I thought, wow, we're just so digitally connected these days. You know, email just comes in at all times, and it's nonstop. Of course, everyone works different schedules, of course, and I get a lot of email from podcasters, and so that kind of drives it as well. But I want to, before we get into the content tonight, I want to relay a quick little story for you. I think you're going to laugh. My three-year-old, he obviously is going to be a computer geek. He's following after Dad in a big way, more than my other two kids are. He's always on my wife's computer downstairs. She's, you know, it just, when it boots up, she logs it in and it stays logged in. But my MacBook Pro that sits up on the desk up here, I generally shut it down and close it up because I've got it set up the way I want it to be. And, you know, generally he hasn't caused any problems, but I'm just worried he's going to mess with something. And so I've left the computer turned down during the daytime. So I came in tonight and I was up here kind of getting ready for the show. And lo and behold, he comes in the office with me. Now, he's been in here two or three times when I've booted the thing up. He's asked me, Dad, can you log me in? Or, you know, can you get me in? He doesn't say log me in. He says, can you get me into the computer? And so I'll log it in. And I have a 6-digit password. So tonight, he comes up here and it opens up the case and pushes the power button and it boots up. And I'm not really paying attention too much to him, and I hear him click, 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 clicking away, and he presses enter, and it's like he's trying to enter the password, and I'm not really paying attention. He gets it wrong two or three times. It dings at me or whatever it does when you put the wrong password in. And then, I don't know, he probably was at it about a minute, and lo and behold, that little three-year-old had memorized that 6-digit password, and he got it right. And it logged in, and I said, my mouth dropped. I mean, I was like, I looked at him and I said, Chris, do you know what the password is? Do you know what the code? And he shows, you know, I said, show me on the keyboard. And he puts his kind of like his hand over the top of the key, and he puts it real slow, and he actually memorized my password from seeing me log in. 3 years old. And I told my wife that, and she was astonished. And I'm very, a six-digit, this is a six-digit password. And it's none of the, well, actually, a couple of the numbers are the same, but I was astounded. I really, really was. How many of you had a kid be able to memorize your password just by looking at your keyboard at three? I'm simply amazed. But I wanted to, had to share that with you because I was astounded. I really was. Well, I tell you, it's, you know, I'm taking a pretty heavy college class load right now. And I have been really, boy, it's been swamped. Everything's coming down to, I got a couple of finals. I have some term papers due. I got some presentations due. And I'm a little bit behind. So I'm taking a day off tomorrow. And I'm actually going to, I told, asked the kids at dinner, I said, what do you guys want to do tomorrow? And they're like, oh, we'd like to go here or go there. And I said, if you had someplace you really wanted to go, where would you go? And they told me, and I said, Choco, I said, you want to take the kids there tomorrow? And she kind of looks at me. I said, I need the house alone. I need to be quiet or else I'm going to have to go to a library or something. I need to work all day. And so she's very graciously going to load the gang up and take them out. Let me finish what I have to finish tomorrow. So hopefully I can get caught up. I just going to leave the email off and everything. It's going to be the only way I'm going to be able to do it. But we do have a roundtable coming up on Saturday, and I think we've got a great great lineup. So I'm looking forward to putting that on. I'm going to be hosting it, and I'm actually not officially presenting at this roundtable. We've got three of the members from techpodcast.com that are going to be presenting. So I do have a couple of things I'm going to go over, though, because we posted the slate for the 2007 Podcast Award nominees, and voting is actually starting Saturday the 28th. So you'll definitely get over to podcastawards.com and vote on your favorite podcast. You'll be able to vote once every 24 hours. Voting ends on August 11th. But what we do every year, we have a tool, and this is a part of our review process. Last year, we only reviewed about 500 sites, ran it through the tool, but the tool automatically loads the page. Excuse me. Automatically loads the page, automatically auto-detects the RSS feed. It goes and does an auto-validation of, make sure that the RSS feed's validated, and it just helps the people that are judging the websites to be able to grade the shows out easier. And it collects a lot of information automatically as well that goes into a spreadsheet file. Well, I posted on geeknewscentral.com some of the results, and I'm not going to go into it tonight on the show, but I'm going to go into that data much more in depth on Saturday, either at the beginning or at the end of the roundtable. I think you'll enjoy it. It's going to be kind of some lessons learned of what we found by reviewing 4,097 podcaster sites. And we, you know, the 42 people that were involved in the review process looked at 4,097 websites, and essentially they worked in teams of two, so you know, essentially 21 people looked at that, 21 groups looked at those websites in the various categories. So I think there'll be a lot of good information that I'll be able to pass to you, and I want to thank those volunteers. Now, just if you want to help out next year, I'll be having a call to action in about 5 months. So big thank you notes and letters are going out to all the folks that that helped. Okay, some of you had problems downloading the show on Tuesday. Essentially what happened was I thought Libsyn had an issue, and it turned out that it was actually a problem with GoDaddy's DNS server. I had mistakenly, and I don't know how I had done this, but I had removed one of the DNS basically, that's a recursive lookup to look as it's operating. It actually does DNS lookups for sites that it has to reach out and touch via the web browser or any tools I'm using. And the cache.libsyn.com was not resolving on one of the DNS servers. And when I finally figured it out about 10 hours later, after spending about an hour on the phone with the folks at Libsyn, we determined that what was going on, and I was able to get it added, and then the show was able to be posted over there. But I had put it up on a backup server, And boy, you guys did a pretty good job of bringing that thing to a crawl. So definitely some challenges out there for high volume shows, and ours is no exception. Okay, you know, one thing that we have going on here in Hawaii is that in Oahu, there's no Krispy Kreme. How many of you like Krispy Kremes? Well, all the Krispy Kremes come in from Maui. And so here in Oahu, they have Krispy Kreme fundraisers where you pay $10, $10 for a dozen Krispy Kremes. And so the kids were pretty excited when I walked in the house tonight with two dozen Krispy Kremes. I stuck one of a dozen in the freezer, and I think they've pretty much killed the other box between, well, okay, I had a couple, of course. But, you know, you never know how... you know, how well you have it, especially if you live in an area that's got all the conveniences. Some, you know, there's some things here in Oahu that we don't have. I'm going to be talking about some of that later on in the show tonight. And it reminded me when I saw that there was an article that's talking about some stuff Target is doing, and we don't have a Target here in Hawaii yet. So when you're, you know, when you're in the mainland and lower 48 or wherever else you live in the world and you don't have some of these good stores, that are available, or if you live in a different country and don't have that availability, it just goes to prove that sometimes online stuff is really saves the day. But we'll get into that some more. All right, let me look at my little list here. Oh, on my Facebook profile, I added a Ustream widget, so now you can actually watch my Ustream stream on Facebook. And what I've been trying to do during the day is I'm actually playing old podcasts, recycling them through. What else have we got going on here? Oh, I guess that's it so far as... oh, on the roundtable, definitely want to check it out. We're going to, of course, be using GoToMeeting. And if you've never tried GoToMeeting free, you'll be able to understand what is why I really love this application and why it's so absolutely powerful. And, you know, whether you're in business or simply want to share something with friends or family, email and voicemail just isn't enough. That's why you should try GoToMeeting, a web conferencing solution that will revolutionize how you communicate with your business associates, family, and friends. Unlimited meetings for one flat rate means you can meet as often as you want for as long as you need. Try it yourself for free for 30 days. Just visit gotomeeting.com/tech podcast. That's gotomeeting.com/tech podcast. Try GoToMeeting free today. I've put a call out once before on the show, and I want to do it again tonight. I'm looking for some rack space. If you have a set of servers in a co-location facility somewhere and you have room and a rack, send me an email. I'm looking to put a couple of boxes in a rack, and I don't want to, I'm willing to, you know, of course, pay my fair share to have the boxes in there, but I don't have the dinero to do my own space at this point, so I'd like to piggyback on someone else's area, and hopefully there's someone out there that can help me out. Volume level, can we talk about that via email, but drop me a line. Hey, I got a new product for you tonight, and this isn't going to really apply to everyone, but some of you it may, especially if you have a hosting account, or if you've got a virtual or dedicated server. You know, have you ever considered getting a secure socket layer certificate? That's an SSL certificate. Well, got security issues? You need an SSL certificate? GoDaddy.com has SSL certificates that protects information flow to and from your website up to 256-bit encryption. A padlock icon appears in users' browser bars telling them their sensitive information is safe with you. GoDaddy SSL certificates provide 99.9% browser recognition, and they're reissued in minutes. Get a GoDaddy Turbo SSL for just, check this out, this is a great deal, for $14.99. You're not going to find that anywhere else. Get a GoDaddy Turbo SSL for just $14.99 by entering the code. Here's the new one, folks, GNC SSL, GNC SSL. When you check out, some restrictions apply. See site for details. Get your PC internet at GoDaddy.com. Of course, if you don't need an SSL certificate, when you're over there getting a domain name, use the code Todd. Getting a hosting account, Pod58. When you're doing a big order, use Geek5. It's going to save you a lot of money out there. So thanks for GoDaddy for being a continued sponsor here at the Geek News Central podcast. All right, got a lot of stuff for you. I really do. I've got a stack here. And I'm going to get into the first article. Is an article up by popsci.com, P-O-P-S-C-I.com. And there is a, you know, Google Earth is starting to update its mapping system right now, and stuff is becoming, getting more resolution out of the pictures. And the editors over at PC World spent some time using Google Earth to scour the surface of the planet, and they turned up some incredible strange sights. So I want you to take a look at this link, and they've got a lot of cool pics here that they have found. Everything from a Chinese sub to a number of different things that they have found that you just wouldn't find searching on your own. You know, you think about it. There's a lot of land down there. When that satellite's looking down and taking a snapshot, you know, it's maybe taking an area that's, you know, I'm looking at this picture that they got, and it might be a mile by a mile square of area that it's looking at. You know, there's a lot of Earth to look at, and I'm sure people could spend days and days and days in there reviewing all of the overhead images. So take a chance and check out some of these cool stuff that they found. And if you find stuff like this, every once in a while someone finds a cool image that comes up on Google Earth, send me an email at geeknews@gmail.com with a link, and I'll be sure to share it in the show notes in the extra section. Okay, I talked about a little bit in the beginning of the show that Target has an announcement. They're going to be promoting Blu-ray DVD format. So they're going to be introducing Sony Blu-ray high-definition DVD players this coming holiday period. Can you believe that? We're already talking about Christmas shopping already. So, you know, the format wars continue to heat up. But as I got to reading this, I got to thinking, Target, Blu-ray DVD players? You know, okay, I haven't been in a Target for a number of years, and just because there are none here, and when I've been back in the mainland, I just haven't had an opportunity to go in one. Do they have high-end electronics in Target now? You know, I go to Walmart, and the electronics there are, well, not very high-end, I can tell you that. So, do any of you buy your electronics from Target? Is the price good? Is the do they have name brand stuff? And this is obviously a Sony player, so it's name brand. But I just wonder if it's going to be a real low end unit here. I think they're indicating. What are they indicating for price? Have they indicated a price? It looks like nope, they haven't indicated a price yet. But what do you guys think? Do you think Blu-ray or HD DVD is winning? What do you want to win? What are you using right now? That's the question. I think we're all kind of sitting on the sidelines, aren't we? And for those of you that have been around for a while, in other words, that are older, remember the VHS beta war? You know, it didn't take VHS too long to win that war, but there's a lot of people, I'm sure, that were pretty disgruntled that they had invested a lot in beta technology. I think I want a player that plays both. I think that's what I want. All right, over on Gizmodo, they've been doing a series of articles that have been reviewing Monster Cable and Monoprice cables. And these are manufacturers. You know, everyone knows about Monster Cables and another manufacturer called Monoprice. They've been comparing HDMI cables, and they've got a new result out. You know, the HDMI signal, the longer the cable is, the more critical it is that you have a good cable. But they did a test here and found that the 35-foot Monoprice cable performed pretty well. And the 50-foot, it didn't perform as good as the Monster cable. So in length, it does appear that when you're getting out there in those real long lengths, that the Monster cable may actually be the way to go. But they did a number of tests. And they said that because of the price differential, no one should ever buy the $300 Monster cable at 50 feet before they try a 50-foot Monoprice at $53. He's basically saying here that they had mixed results. It worked worked very well sometimes, and they only had a couple of small tests that it didn't do well in. And this is with the 1080p signal. So if you've got a HDTV with 1080p, I think that and if you need a long cable like that, definitely check out monoprice.com first before you go out there and spend that big money on a monster cable. Generally, they're not needed. You know, they'll tell you all kinds of stuff. Oh, they're rust resistant and they have a better seal. You know, I've been dealing with electronics for a very, very long time. And you know when it gets really critical? It gets very, very critical in RF technology that cables are clean and torqued right. It gets very critical in fiber, obviously, because fiber has to have a clean pathway. But when it comes to standard cables that are like RCA and HDMI, you know, just let the salesman talk and then go home and buy yourself a monoprice cable online. Save yourself a lot of money, a lot of heartache. Because you don't need to spend that big money that they're advertising. And, you know, you see monster cables hanging on all shelves at all the major big boxes. So, you know, definitely try the cheaper cables first. If nothing else, and you want a better, if you want to try a monster cable later on, at least you'll have an additional cable when you add in another device. You know, but I am always, you know, always go monoprice, initially at monoprice.com. Okay, 10 free services to send self-destruct emails which expire, disappear automatically after the specified time interview. Very, very cool. Have you ever wanted to send an email to someone, but you thought, I don't really want that being out there long term? Everyone's had their mouse hovered over top of a send button before, thinking, do I really want to send this? Now, obviously, what would happen is if this was something really critical, people could just do a screenshot and they'd have the information. But if this is something you're a little bit hesitant with, but you also want to send, but also don't want hanging out there for 10 years, this may be the way to go. So over at thinkabdul.com, they've got a listing of 10 different services that have self-destructing email. WillSelfDestruct.com, KickNotes, BigString, Kablooey Mail, Zmail Basic, Stealth Message, SD Message, Destruct Message, VaporStream. Now, I haven't tested any of these, so I'm not endorsing any of the products. I would definitely do a little proactive looking into these companies before I signed up for them. I'm not familiar with this specific blog. This is the first time I've seen this. But needless to say, it looks like a pretty cool offering. Now, every once in a while, I just run into something that I have to share with you just because it's pretty interesting. You know, as kids, how many of you ever did something that you kind of planned and maybe you went and did something a little mischievous that maybe made the press in your local newspaper? Something that probably if you'd have got caught originally, you would have ended up in the pokey for, maybe got in trouble with the authorities. Well, the only way I can describe this next story is it sounds like some kids definitely had too much time on their hands. But a couple in Paterson, New Jersey, went to bed. Well, actually, the husband went to bed at 1 a.m., and the wife got out of bed at 5 a.m. And between 1 and 5, the swimming pool that they had in the back, one of those blow-up swimming pools with 1,000 gallons of water in it, disappeared. But what was interesting about how it disappeared was is there was not a drop of water to be found. And I guess the way this was, way the swimming pool was set up, there had been no way it had been possible for someone to have made off without this swim. If they would have dumped the water, they would have found it. They would have seen it. There's just no way they couldn't have. But someone was very innovative and pumped out 1,000 gallons of water into something and stole her 10-foot diameter swimming pool. It's, you know, one of those cheap ones, not necessarily cheap, but one of those that you can get at most stores that sell kids' pools and stuff like that at Toys R Us. So police department said that the theft was apparently planned. Now, I must say, pretty innovative. So 1,000 gallons. How did they do that and not, you know, did they siphon the water off? You wouldn't think you'd be able to siphon that much water off in about 4 hours, especially to be quiet enough about it and, you know, have hoses long enough to take the water someplace where it couldn't be seen. So a little mind puzzler there. We'll see what happens. We'll see if authorities figure it out. Back to the tech stuff here. All right, over at trendplex.com, and this is the first time I've seen this website, and I've added to my reading list, and there's very few sites these days that get added to my reading list. But they've got a Stephen Price has an article on here, talks about the top 10 Gmail tweaks. And if you're a big Gmail user, you may be familiar with some of these tools already, but some great applications that you can use with Gmail. I won't go into them here. You'll see the Gmail tweaks within the show notes at geeknewscentral.com. And if you know, if you've got a tool that you use, that you love, that you can't live without, something that you use in conjunction with another service, well, I always love to get those little types of tips. If you have a widget that you use on your website that you absolutely love, that you can't live without, that's the kind of stuff I want to hear from you as well. Of course, you can always call in your comments to the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. All right, there's a great article over on Ars Technica talking about the state of wireless. Check this out. The state of wireless HDMI and wireless HD. Whoa, that sounds good, yeah. Wireless HDMI and wireless HD. So what's going on here is they're saying that it may not be too long here before we're going to have available in the home some devices that are going to allow us to transmit HD capable signals, which are going to require a signal that's able to, it's going to be require a medium that's going to be able to transmit it more than 300 megabits per second. And it's going to be, they're going to be using Y-Media Ultra Wideband to do this. And I guess they've got some products coming to market here. And they're going to say the UWB costs are going to be about $300. And they're going to be able to transmit. Now, this is the kind of the bummer. They're going to be able to transmit 1080p at a distance of 25 feet, supposedly without compression here. So along with that, wireless HD, Samsung, Sony, and others are supporting the Y-Media standard, but they're not using that standard for their own wireless products. Rather, Samsung and Sony, and along with NEC, are going to be working in the 60 gigahertz band in order to offer high-definition content without the need for compression. They're saying that wireless HD uses the 7 gigahertz of continuous bandwidth around 60 gigahertz. What does that transmit into speed here? It says YHD will transmit at 5 gigabits. And, well, it won't be as fast. Well, yeah, maybe it will. It'll be faster, 300 megabits per, versus 5 gigabits per second. Pretty quick. So they're saying that they anticipate that these will be available sometime in early 2008. I'm sure we're going to see these at the Consumer Electronics Show. Speaking of the Consumer Electronics Show, I'm on the hunt for a sponsor for the Consumer Electronics Show. If you remember last year, I went and was sponsored by Hitachi. So it's a pretty big commitment, but it's a pretty big return as well. I believe we reached about 400,000 people on the videos that we did at CES last year. So looking forward to going on the hunt for a couple of sponsors. I won't go without one. It's too expensive to go on my own. It really, really is. The missus would not put up with that kind of an expenditure. All right, some very sad news coming out of NASA. It appears that NASA is investigating possible sabotage of a recorder going to a lab. This is not good. It appears that a contractor, not necessarily a NASA employee, it cut some wires in a device meant to record and transmit to Mission Control several measurement of stresses to the space station structure. Now, this here is just a, that's just amazing that this could happen, because you say the word sabotage, that has, you know, for a guy that's in the Navy, that has very implicit connotations. you know, that is generally, you know, when I hear someone hear the word sabotage, that's, you know, that's an act of almost like treason. You know, it's where the point where a person is, you know, could affect in this case, could cause the space agency to not receive information. It would jeopardize the crew up there. I'm sure we're going to hear a lot more of this, but we are going to see what happens here, and I'm sure someone is going to be prosecuted very, very heavily. And if this proves out to be the case, then there is going to be someone that's going to have some jail time to deal with. They did want to stress that this had nothing to do with a strike by the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers that's been underway since June. They're saying that the company responsible for the recording device also supplies an external sensor used aboard a shuttle to detect any impact on the spacecraft wings from Dervis. Now, that's even more serious. I'm sure there's a lot of folks at that company that are going back and opening up gear and looking at it. While I can't talk about it, I was aware of an individual at one time that tried to do some sabotage and was actually prosecuted. It's not a good thing. It's very dangerous. It endangers lives. And they're saying this is the first incident of this that's happened that they know of ever. So we will see where this goes. Just shocking. This is really, really shocking. All right, moving on to more positive things. There's an announcement made out that a uTorrent mobile is available. So there, you are now going to be able to remotely control a peer-to-peer application via the web. Excuse me. You're going to be able to use a peer-to-peer application via your phone to access data via the web. And it's going to be able to be loaded on some devices. The project's called uTorrent MUI. And let me see if I can see here what actual devices it's supported on. It's you can put it on a Palm PDA. What else do we have? Is there any other operating systems or is it just Palm? Looks like right now it's only on the Palm, but I'm sure this will be hacked up quickly and be made available for additional devices. But pretty exciting. Peer-to-peer via mobile. You know, it's actually probably a smart thing because, you know, it's going to be needed. You know, as slow as, you know, mobile downloads are, and if you have four or five mobiles in the same area that are, you know, you could really, this could be very impactful. We'll see how it works and whether or not, but what's that going to do other people's bills, you know, because a lot of people are not on unlimited data plans. So you'd have to be very, very careful with this. Does it work when the system is wireless too? It doesn't say. But anyway, we'll keep an eye on that. And if you're a Palm user, you'll definitely want to check this out. I found one of these tests once before, and this actually may be something similar. But if you want to test your knowledge of online scams, I'll have a link up in the show notes to that. Maybe a good thing to brush up your skills. I've got a great human interest story that I'm going to post in the show notes tonight. I'm not going to talk about it in the show. But for those of you that are cat lovers, you'll definitely want to check out this story about this cat called Oscar. He's a pretty remarkable cat, but nothing on. We're going to continue on because it's definitely not techy enough. All right, there's a good recommendation out over on Lifehacker. And if you haven't ever been over to this website, this is a good site to be subscribed to. And it gave me a pause today because I don't know if we've been backing up our data on Google Apps or not. I know that we've got a lot of data on Google Apps. And I've got a lot of documents and spreadsheets shared with the collaborative group at Raw Voice. But there's some recommendations out there that you make sure you back up your data because if Google loses it, there's not a lot you can do with that. And there's a few applications out there that allow you to do that now, that allows you to download and back up your Google Docs and spreadsheets. One of them is a Grease Monkey script. And the link to all this stuff will be in the show notes. But the same thing goes with backing up photos on different sites. You know, if you're a Picasa user or if you use Flickr, it's probably a good idea to make sure that if you're not keeping some of that stuff locally, that you get it backed up. So that in case something bad happens, which does from time to time, that your data is not impacted. You know, we this past week, and I didn't originally have this in the show notes, so let me go over to my website and load up the actual article here. In San Francisco, they had a huge power outage, and it affected 360, I guess what's the name of the company here? Is it 365, I don't know if it's 365 data or whatever it is, but it's a big co-location facility. They run, yes, 365 Main is the name of the company. They have companies like Technorati, Craigslist, Six Apart, a whole bunch of different Web 2.0 companies are hosted in their co-location facility. And they have this, they actually bragged the day of the power outage in the city that they had went 2 years with 100% uptime. And what happened was is their generators failed to start, and a part of their data center went dark, causing literally thousands of websites, I guess, coming down and coming offline. And these companies have had all kinds of, you know, guarantees that that would never, ever happen by being in this data center. So I just wonder how much those companies got paid when the data center went dark. I'm sure there's some sort of, does anybody know about that? Does anybody have a contract with a big data center like 365 Main? What are the, you know, they give you this 100% uptime guarantee. What happens when they go down for 2 hours or however long they're down? And what happens when they cause you to have an outage? Because it's not simple to start some of these services back up. You know, I even look at the server stack that we have at Raw Voice. And if the data center that our servers are in right now, if that went dark, in order to bring the sites back up, we'd have to bring them up in phases because you just can't, you know, you can't bring up one thing without the other. It has to be a phased startup. And generally, the machines will restart on their own, but it won't be a clean startup. And we've got some scripts set up to make sure that when the machines come up, the data is secure. So, you know, we've built that into our contingencies. But some of these data centers, you know, I've only got a handful of machines. Can you imagine if you had 100 or 200 or 300 computers and they were all tied to, you know, various databases and had various, you know, I'm sure it's painful for those services to be brought back online and make sure the data is safe. So with that outage, it just goes to prove that even though this 365 Main was a company that had, you know, state-of-the-art facilities. You know, Murphy's Law does strike. And this goes for Google, too. I'm getting back to the original article on how, you know, let's say they blew a hard drive during that failure and something wasn't, you know, that the data wasn't backed up someplace. You could lose your stuff very, very easily if two or three of the right machines got taken down. Okay, over on Information Week, and Fred Lange, he always has some good information to put out. He's got a step-by-step illustrated guide on how to boot Windows XP from an ordinary USB drive. Whoa, that's cool. So if you have a USB thumb drive, and it's got enough storage in it, he's got a step-by-step instructions on how to be able to boot XP from a thumb drive. Definitely want to check that out. I'm telling you, folks, this is the way things are going. I'm going to predict in 10 years, you don't ever travel with a computer no more. You're going to take your thumb drive with you, and the hotels you're going to stay in will have a high-quality professional laptop that'll be in the room, hooked up with high broadband service. You won't boot, but you'll be able to stick a USB stick or maybe one of those hard drives. It's just a digital electronic hard drive, and stick it in and, you know, boot the machine up and you'll do what you have to do. And then when you leave, you take your solid state hard drive with you or your USB stick. I think that's what's coming. I really do. It's maybe take longer than 10 years, but, you know, this is the first step that you'll be able to do this. Now, some very, very interesting news coming out of South Korea. It appears that SK Telecom, it's rumored here that they're in talks to purchase Sprint's Nextel. Now, this could get interesting in that if a foreign provider buys up Sprint Nextel, this would definitely have an impact on handsets, because there's some slick Korean handsets that are available, and they have some very slick services as well. So can you imagine using the mentality that they use overseas on cell phones and get that into an American company, have that mentality shift, open up the cell phones, get the applications in, and just have robust services? You know, the companies here in the United States are not doing it. Sprint, AT&T, T-Mobile, they're not doing it. They're locking down handsets. And, you know, they're nickel and diming you to death. So we could see some major changes if this went forward. So we will we'll keep an eye on this and see if this actually happens. But this would be major. A foreign company coming in and buying an American telecom company. Huge. All right, those of you that are in New York City, I want you to shout out on me here. I want to, what is the deal? Why are the New York City cabbies all upset about having GPS tracking systems being installed in their cabs? I think I can answer the question. You know, when I've gotten in cabs in New York, the last time I was there, and tell the cab driver where to go, you know, I'm just some, you know, I'm some schmuck from Hawaii. I don't know my way around the city. And I don't carry a map. So, you know, I'm sure that I got taken for a ride. And while I'm sure many cab drivers are very, very straight up and, you know, takes you from point A to point B quickly, I'm sure some of the others did not do, you know, they could have took me, I could have been a block away from somewhere and they could have took me 10 blocks or 20 blocks for a ride. But I think what this is, this plan is to do is to have passengers, you know, be serviced better. So starting October 1st, they're saying as the city's 13,000 taxis come up for inspection, they must have GPS equipment along with touchscreen monitors that will let passengers pay by credit card. This is cool because I tried to pay by credit card a couple of times and the guy in the car, oh, no work, doesn't work. So, but the cab driver is saying they're going to strike on this because you know what? They know it's going to impact. You see, it's cash money, folks. You give anytime you give someone cash, guess what? That's just an easy way for Uncle Sam never to get its paid taxes on that. And it could change things big time in the city. Of course, you know, the transit authority there in the city wants their taxes paid off those fare rides for sure. All right, those of you that are Windows users and you know John Dvorak, sit down. I'm about ready to floor you. You know, John Dvorak's been a pretty big Windows fan for a long time, and he's never really had too much thing positive say about Macs. Well, he made a statement today that is going to just blow your mind. He says, that's right. I'm using a Mac, and surprise, I like it. Holy cow. This is an amazing, amazing statement by a hardcore Windows user. And just to go over a couple of things he said. He says, hey, I figured since I'm known for raging on Mac all the time, I might as well speak from some experience, right? It's been a couple of months now, so I thought I'd report what I think about the platform from a user perspective, specifically from a PC user's perspective. And he says, first of all, the machine is not half bad. It's very quiet and performs as well as other PCs on general office applications. Generally speaking, the interface is slicker than PCs, and you get the sense that the computer isn't about to start acting weird because of some virus, spyware, of endless Firefox loading procedures going on in the background and killing all the cycles of the computer. So, you know, it's just a few comments he made. I'll let you all check the rest of it out. And, you know, I think the only thing I don't like about my MacBook Pro is when I transitioned from my laptop keyboard to my Mac keyboard, because the keyboard is smaller, my laptop is a desktop replacement. So the keyboard goes all the way across the laptop to with about maybe a quarter of an inch on each side. So it's just a regular full-size keyboard. But when I'm on my 17-inch MacBook Pro, the keyboard is tiny, and I'm always hitting the wrong key, and it just drives me insane. It really does, because I'm always having to back up and delete. That's the only transition point that I've had troubles with my MacBook. So any of you else, you know, have trouble making that transition, those of you that are using both Windows and Macs? Apple's reporting, actually, what was found was that Apple has applied for a patent that is going to essentially tie power devices to actual, in other words, like your charger, tie your charger to an actual device. So if someone picks up your iPod, or if they steal your iMac or your MacBook Pro, if they don't take the power device with them, the machine will actually quit working after a while. Now, this would come, you know, there's been many a time, especially when I was out at the Consumer Electronics Show, I forgot to bring my power cord with me over to the blog house one night, and I was using both machines. I was actually doing rendering on the Mac, and someone let me use their power cord. And this could be a problem when, you know, when a bunch of geeks get together and there's, you know, 25 cables on a table. So I guess we'll have to see how they implement this, and there has to be some sort of an override code, I would think. But the patent that they've applied for here is it would render the device essentially useless by building DRM into the power cords that go along with the computer. Now, what happens when you know, if you're like me, I've got a power cord here at my desk that I never unplug, and then when I go to work, I've got a secondary power plug there. There would have to be some sort of a pairing that would be able to be done with that. All right, over in Second Life, boy, those of you that are Second Life users, the FBI has gotten together with Linden Labs and essentially required a policy change. The gambling taking place in Second Life is being shut down. It's now banned. And boy, oh boy, the fallout is huge. Actually, I'm kind of happy because where my property is in Second Life, where we have the Raw Voice virtual headquarters, I've been real hesitant to build anything there any further than from what we have, is because the island has a number of casinos on it that just use an absolute ungodly amount of the CPU processor power of the specific grid that we're on. So now that these gambling places are going to be shut down in Second Life, what this is going to do is it's going to free up a lot of CPU power. So I think that Second Life will be better in some ways. Now, if people are going there, I never really got it. Why would you want to go in and could you cash out your Lindens for cash? Is that what was being done? Is that why they got shut down? I haven't dug in that deep, but they're saying that this could cut the attractions on Second Life by about 50%. Good riddance, is my opinion. Really, really is. Okay, now this next story. Oh my goodness! You remember the guy that got the Zune logo on his arm? Got it tattooed on his arm. And you thought, okay, that's kind of interesting, right? Well, when I was 18 and getting ready to come in the Navy, my mom told me one thing. She says, Todd, I don't care what you do. I don't care what woman you marry, but don't come home with a tattoo. So I followed mom's advice, and I don't have anything against tattoos. I think there are some of them that are absolutely beautiful. And I've actually considered going against my mom's best wishes a couple of times, but I'm still tattoo free. And, you know, my wife and I have talked about it before, maybe getting one. And it's really taboo for Japanese to have a tattoo. But anyway, the only reason I know this is real is because there's two ways that this guy's got his arm in the picture, and I'm going to read this to you. This is what he had tattooed onto his forearm, basically from about where your watch is all the way up until your shoulder. It says, and this is what he's got tattooed on, a fatal exception, 0E, has occurred at 0137:BFFA21C9. The current application will be terminated. In quotes, press any key to terminate that current application. Press Ctrl-Alt-Delete again to restart the computer. You will lose any unsaved information in all of your applications. Press any key to continue. He had the blue screen of death message tattooed on his arm. Please, someone look at this and tell me that this is a fake. This is the ultimate fanboy. I cannot comprehend this. I really can't. I saw this today. I'm like, you're kidding me. Please show your children this. Tell them this is not the thing to do. Oh my gosh. You know, I'm sorry. It doesn't even look cool. It really, really doesn't. But he's got his arm stretched out one picture, bent in the next. It looks like the real deal, folks. It really does. All right, there's plenty of online IM systems out where you can log in on via a website and have instant messaging available via the different, you can talk with the MSN or AOL or ICQ. There's a new one out there that's called Velvet Puffin at velvetpuffin.com. It's an instant message meets social networking site. And, you know, my instant messaging is way down ever since I started using Twitter. I still instant message with a lot of my regular folks I talk with, but velvetpuffin.com if you're looking for another online IM site. And if your IT people have actually locked you out of your current sites that you use, that happens from time to time, you can definitely use this one for a while before they catch on. All right, the folks over at Twitter, congratulations. They were able to gain a round of funding. This is not surprising. You know, He's already built one company successfully with Blogger, and then they went out and were able to get money for Odeo, and actually gave the money back and to the venture capitalists. So they now have gotten money from Union Square Ventures, and I don't know if they've funded them before, probably have, but undisclosed on how much money they've got. So I guess we'll see what happens here if they ramp up now with Twitter and figure out how to monetize that. All right, over on Windows Connected, there's an article entitled "Why All the Secrecy About Service Pack 1?" And this is a question a lot of people are asking. You know, come on, Microsoft, tell us what's going on with Service Pack 1. When's it coming? And I think what this guy gets into the brass tacks of the matter is that he's kind of said, they continue to get burned on any time they talk about their products, so maybe we're taking a Steve Jobs approach and not talking at all. And this might be smart. This might be a smart move on Microsoft's part, so we'll see what happens. Talking a little bit more about Microsoft here. This is kind of the oxymoron of the night. Now, when you think of open source, you think of Linux. You think of projects that are out on the web. You think of Drupal. You think of big collaborative things. Well, does Microsoft and open source, that doesn't go together, right? Well, Microsoft is pushing their way into participating, partnering, growing, and learning with companies that want to work with partnerships with them to, utilize some of their stuff that they've open sourced. And I don't know. We'll have to see what happens with this. And there's been some commentary today on the net basically saying, they're trying to redefine open source, their type of open source versus what most of us are actually used to being for open source. But if you are a Microsoft developer and you're looking to continue to develop more products that work with Windows applications, You'll definitely want to check out Microsoft.com/open source. I have a link to this in the show notes. Along with that as well, some little more Windows news. Seems like this was a Microsoft day for news. They had their PR department kicking pretty heavy here. Microsoft's getting ready to release an early version of Silverlight. The web tools are going to be out the door here very, very quickly. So they're going to have a release candidate and a second beta of Visual Studio 2008 online. And it said that Silverlight version 1.0 is scheduled for a final release in the fall. So very, very quickly, these new products are going to come on market. We'll see if they'll be able to compete against Adobe in this. How many of you bought a used car recently? You know, I've said many, many times in this show, that's all I buy. I don't buy new cars. I only buy used cars. And that's the way I roll. You know, I haven't had a car payment in many, many, many years. But there's a new website out there. It's entering the $370 billion used car market. It's called Hot Swap. You can go over there and get your car listed on it. You can do a video of it. And they've got it all social media'd out so that you can, give people a rendition of what your used car is and how you're selling it and where it's at, and it's tied in with a Blue Book service. So I don't know what they're charging for the for the listings, or if you sell your vehicle or not. I guess they're paying and they're gonna let dealers be on here too. Listings by individuals are free, and dealers pay a small fee per listing and also pay for more advanced software to keep track of listings. I would wish they would just keep the dealers off so I know who I'm dealing with many times. They need to flag dealer accounts and make them very obvious that they're dealers. So check out hotswap.com. Might be the place to buy a new used car or to sell one. I've always said I'm hoping by the time I get to be the ripe old age of thinking about, revising my will on a weekly basis, I'm hoping that they have a way where I can jack in and basically download. Of course, at that time, I may have Alzheimer's and there might be nothing left up here in the gray matter. But there's a new website out called You Departed. And I don't know what I think about this so far. YouDeparted.com provides an encrypted electronic safe deposit box with up to 5 gigabytes of space that can be accessed by loved ones in the event of a member's death. And you can store important information in there. Passwords, videos, last messages. You know, I'm gonna give you a little project. When you're home alone, try to videotape a message that you would want to go to your wife or kids in case something happened to you. Try to do that exercise. I've been down that road. I've done that, and I actually have digital files stored. And I have, my mom has an actual envelope with some multimedia on it. Try doing that. It's a pretty tough thing to do. And, but it's something that I felt when I was heading off to do what I was doing overseas, that I thought it was a necessary thing because I had my kids were younger, and if something happened to Dad, I definitely wanted them to have, words of wisdom from me that they could review. And I'd actually went through and done this, and it's tough. It's tough to even think about your demise and then to put stuff in context when you're creating it with the full knowledge that you're creating it specifically for your loved ones to look at. I really wish that this service would have been available for my dad. And I think it's something that everyone should really consider. We're in a digital age. Let's, get this stuff in where you can create something that'll have a lasting memory. So You Departed, I think they've got a good model. If they can survive for the long haul, if I create something now, I'd want to be able to update it, of course, on a regular basis. But I think when you're here, as long as you're short-term actively maintaining it, I don't know if I'd want to record something now and then 20 years later someone get it when I forgot about the account. That I don't know. But check it out, youdeparted.com. Sprint is going to be developing a mobile internet portal with Google. This is a big step. This is a good partnership by Google. So it looks like Sprint's got their game on when it comes to that. So I'll have to look forward to see what they're coming in with there. Boy, I've got a whole bunch more stuff here, and I need to... need to get wrapped up. There's a good article in the Wall Street Journal about keeping tabs on kids' phones. I know some of you have mixed thoughts on this, but for a $10 monthly fee, you'll be able to load a little software application up that essentially is a watchdog that calls home to mama and tells your service what numbers your kids are doing and what they're texting. Depends on how much you trust or don't trust your kids. This might be a solution for you. Over at spacetoday.net, there was a fatal explosion out at the Mojave Airport. It appears that two employees of, Scaled Composites, those are the folks that are developing the Spaceship 2 suborbital passenger spacecraft, were killed. No reports yet on who that was, so we'll keep our eyes glazed to the net on that and see if we can, or on the news, see if we can find out who it was as well. If you're a Vista user, apparently there's some people out there having some problems by just updating drivers. They're being made to actually go and re-authenticate with Windows just by updating a driver, not any hardware. What is up? Hello? Do drivers get updated all the time? Can you imagine having to, I would be upset. Microsoft's going to have to do something about that. They really, really are. Okay, I think I'm going to, there'll be three or four articles here that will not have any commentary tonight. Actually, more than that. I've got five or six that I'm going to skip, and they'll be in the show notes. One that I did want to point out was Snagit, and I actually got a link, an email from an actual listener that pointed me at this. Snagit has an output now for OneNote 2007, so if you're a OneNote user, you can use Snagit now to send data to that. And I guess the last thing I'll talk about here is that the Congress is looking at the digital TV transition, and they're thinking it could become a digital disaster because it's the awareness has been raised. A lot of senior citizens out there, and I know my grandparents included, have old sets and are still getting their TV via an antenna on the roof. So they're thinking here that senior citizens who watch a great deal of TV, an average of 5.5 hours every single day, could be heavily affected here because many of them have old sets and have not converted and may not have the income availability to switch to a digital tuner or want to pay someone to upgrade a system. So there's potential here for a big, huge fallout coming soon. So I want to encourage all of you, if you have grandparents out there that are in that situation, to start talking to them now about this and letting them know that there's going to be some changes coming. And maybe you can help them out and get them switched over and make it easy for them so that the rest of us can get that 700 megahertz frequency back. That's what I'm looking forward to. All right, I got some voicemail here. Let's go ahead and play this. We'll go ahead and get into that. And then I got some actual email to go through too. So, of course, you can always send your comments to geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com, or call the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. Here's the first voicemail.
Hey, Todd, it's Kevin Crossman from fratpackpodcast.com.
Hey.
With regards to your story about Apple's charging $5 to enter the Apple Store,
nah.
I assume that you know that that's a joke.
Of course.
The fact that you put a little smiley in your show notes indicates that you think it's a joke. However, your delivery on the show did not provide requisite proof that you understood that it was a joke. So
I did that on purpose.
I am just calling to make sure you understand that, because that's not really the way it's happening. Just a joke. And if you intended to make it sound perfectly clear that you understood it was a joke, you did not succeed. Anyway, other than that, keep up the great work. Fine.
I purposely did that because I wanted to. I definitely got a reaction because I got a lot of emails, and some people did see the smiley face, some people didn't. But next time I'll be sarcastic. But I did it on purpose. Just I call that a little bit of fish in there, and I'm glad that that you informed me. But that I did. I knew that. I know that was a satire site. So. Very funny. How many of you thought that Apple was actually charging $5?
Hi, Todd. It's Tom calling. And
hey, Tom.
Just listening to, or just listening to finish your show from July 24th. You know, your flow was just fine. It does not sound as bad as you made it.
It felt like it.
Like it sounded. I think you're your own worst critic. So, but good job. Anyway, I just want to let you know. I want to ask you a question. I have some listeners who are inquiring on whether or not there's some software out there that can take an audio file and transcribe it onto paper. And I know a while back you were playing around with, I don't know if it was Dragon Natural Speaking or something else, but is there software out there that can do that or at least convert an audio file into English so that somebody who's in Brazil or who is in Germany or Denmark or wherever can go ahead and go back and read those show notes? Or, you know what I mean? I don't know if that's possible or not. And I do recall that you were working with a program like that, but it wouldn't, there was just too much, it wasn't catching at all. So anyway, yeah, don't worry about it. It's a great show. Keep up the good work. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Aloha. Hey, you know, there's a whole bunch of solutions out there. When I was at Consumer Electronics Show, I saw a great solution that allowed you to speak into the device. It used Dragon Naturally Speaking as a back end, and it collected the English portion of it. Then it translated into Spanish or Korean, or there was four or five languages that it translated into and would actually read it back to you. Now, I think that that program actually did the physical translation for the show notes as well and translated them to Spanish, whatever language it was. But, you know, as much as I tried, Dragon Naturally Speaking just, I almost have to have another computer running here to do that because it's pretty software intensive. And if I don't, how should I say it? It just didn't pick up everything. It was too much work to be able to get it so it was comprehensible. And I've actually played around with it as well as playing it back and letting it capture it that way, and that didn't work so well either. You know, it's, I think we're going to get there, but we're not quite there yet. Someday we will be. Someday, you know, and I think they've got these devices in Japan. I can speak English into the thing, and it comes out Japanese, and vice versa. I think there's some handheld devices, but they're very, very expensive. But we need something that definitely would, you know, it'd be great to have this show translated completely into Spanish or another language and the show notes translated. I'm sure we could do that. There's probably, maybe the folks out there listening can help. Maybe give us some suggestions, but great commentary. Thanks.
Hey, Todd, it's Susie Bell in St. Louis. Hey. Just a couple of comments from your last show. Actually, from a show before, I guess two shows before, when I went over to buy Derek Miller's CD, and it's no longer available, and only available by download.
Oh.
And, of course, I very rarely download any kind of music because I can't take it with me. That's a big deal to me. I almost always buy CDs because then I can put it in the car, or, you know, put it in the stereo at home, and I can put it on my iPod and do whatever I want with it. So kind of frustrating. I hope they come back in soon because I did want to get his album. And second of all, you were talking about whether some of us wouldn't move to being able to do our work online anywhere, wherever we went, word processing, PowerPoint presentations, spreadsheets, whatever. And that's something I would love to do. And Microsoft was moving that way at one point, but nobody wanted to pay for subscriptions. And I'm kind of with that crowd. I'm not sure I'd want to do it either. But it would be convenient. You know, I write, so I've always got my writing on a thumb drive that I carry around with me that I can use anywhere I go as long as I have access to Microsoft Word. But, you know, it'd be nice to just be able to do that online anywhere, regardless of the software that's actually on the machine. It'd be nice to think that at some point we can get to not needing, you know, 400 gig hard drives to hold all of our programs and that we just can use whatever products we need via the web because we're all online anyway. So just my 2 cents or so, and keep up the good work. Thanks. Bye.
Hey, Susabel, thank you so much. And I guess in response to taking your media with you, you know what I really need is I need a USB drive that's waterproof. I've washed more USB drives. I'm a typical guy. I leave stuff in my pockets. I haven't washed my wallet in 3 or 4 years, but I'm always leaving because I don't like having it hang around my neck or I don't like it on my keychain. It's just, I got to have it, just want to stick it in my pocket, you know? So I need a USB drive that's waterproof. That's the only way I'm going to avoid having it run through the laundry because my wife has got a pretty much policy. If it's in the pockets, it's going through the wash. And if she finds money, that's her money, you know. But going back to, yeah, I think it's great. I think it's going to happen little by little. We'll just have to see. But, you know, make sure you keep a backup of that USB drive. That's for sure. Also, you know, so far as Derek's music goes, why can't you download it and burn it to a CD? I don't think his music's wrapped in DRM. So, you know, if you've got a Windows machine or even a Mac, they all have pretty much standard. You can, you know, you can burn that music to a CD so you can still take it with you. Kind of curious why you're not doing that. You know, that's a very easy thing to do. And if you're not familiar with on how to do it, you know, just Google it and you'll be able to, you know, there's plenty of sites that give you instruction on how to do it. All right, let's move on to the next voicemail, last voicemail for the evening.
Hey there, Todd. It's Andrew Darlow from the Imaging Buffet.
Hey, Andrew.
On the topic of voiceover IP, I have a little suggestion for you. I've been using a company called Viatalk for over a year, and I think they're great. If you call, you actually get a person. You don't usually have to wait too long. They're in upstate New York. They can answer questions. They generally know what they're doing, and the service and the features are fantastic. A few months ago, they were offering 2 years of service for $199. That's unlimited, U.S. and Canada. That's like $8 a month. So I don't think you'll find a better rate. But right now it's $199 per year, and they'll buy, I guess, a couple months of a competitor's contract. So if you want to find out more, they're at Viatalk, Viatalk.com. And I'm using it now, actually, to call. So,
oh, good.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Also, I found that the quality and reliability is really based a lot on the broadband connection, the broadband modem, and the router compared with just the provider. So I had a three-year-old Linksys WRT54G router, and like every day I was getting dropouts. It was driving me crazy. So I replaced it with a Linksys WRT150N router, and that has the Linksys PAP2 voice over IP box plugged into it, and now it's running really, really well on a setup with a mixed network, with a Mac laptop, with an internal 802.11g card, and a Dell laptop with an internal 802.11b card. I'm actually seeing a little reduction in download speed compared to when I had the WRT54G. I used to get like 5,000 to 6,000 kilobits per second down. Now I'm getting like 3,000 to 4,000, but I'm not complaining. I'll send you an email with the Japan rates in case you're curious about that. That's all for now. Aloha and keep up the great work. Bye bye.
Andrew, thanks for the feedback. I definitely appreciate it. And thanks for we'll check out that site. But I tell you what, we're already out of time, folks, tonight, and I have a bunch of email. I'm gonna have to do a special show at some point here. Very, very soon, and get caught up on some of these big questions a lot of people are asking. But I want to thank Bill, Doug, Aaron, Jordan, James, Luke, Michael, Lisa, Mike, Bree, Dave, Neer, I guess Bob, Michael, Greg, Lawrence, Keith, and Grant for all sending in comments. I apologize I couldn't get to them tonight, and I'll try to take some time and reply back to each one of you. And as always, please send in your great comments, and I'll take some time, I promise, to get caught up on some of this commentary that you guys are sending me. But I'll have all your suggestions and links in the show notes tonight. Just things just got a little long here tonight as well. But as always, hey, thanks for staying subscribed, and of course, send your voicemails to 619-342-7365. And your email comments to geeknews@gmail.com. I'll be back with you on Tuesday. Make sure you get over to podcastawards.com and vote for your favorite shows. And I look forward to seeing how that all comes out here on August 11th. But as always, y'all have a safe weekend. Take care. And from historic Ford Island here in Honolulu, Hawaii, aloha.